The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. This show continues my governmental podcast series, delving into the federal executive branch agencies of the United States government. This show will feature an agency that isn't quite an agency, but is designated a corporation. It is known to most people as Amtrak. Now, you probably would ask me, why Amtrak? And the plain and simple answer is, it is the next one on my list of independent agencies and government corporations that I will be delving into in my future podcasts on the federal executive bureaucracy called government. So here we go. Although it is called Amtrak, the official designation of this independent body within our governmental executive branch bureaucracy is technically called the National Railroad Passenger Corporation. Now, the term Amtrak itself, according to various sources, means American Passenger Railroad Corporation. However, I found that a better answer to Amtrak is nothing more or less complex than a contraction of American and track, therefore Amtrak. How they came up with this group of words that shortened the name, I don't know, but that is what it stands for beyond its official designation as the National Railroad Passenger Corporation. Now, Amtrak, or the National Railroad Passenger Corporation, came into existence due to the passage of legislation, the Rail Passenger Service Act of 1970, which established this National Railroad Passenger Corporation. Service began, or should I say, was transferred from the then inexistent railroads and officially began operating under the name of Amtrak in 1971. But think back in history and recall, the United States had a thriving railroad transportation system, both cargo and passenger, dating all the way back to the middle 1800s. The existing railroads served passengers as well as cargo. But as the automobile developed in the early 20th century and roadways were constructed for them, the American method of getting from here to there changed. Then came the advent of the bus companies serving the far-off, out-of-the-way locations and at a very reasonable rate to boot. And finally, airline service grew by providing a quick and reliable transportation system between larger population centers and eventually even smaller cities. Due to these naturally progressing events, technology and innovation, within our free market system, passenger rail transportation was becoming more and more expensive and cost inefficient. The end of most passenger rail transportation was imminent due to drastic declines in rail passenger travel because of the impact of these cars, buses, and aircraft. Additionally, there is one other important aspect as to this change in the viability and cost of passenger travel, especially at its end. The government, in 1966, decided to discontinue the use of rail in the transportation of mail, and in that year, 1966, changed to using trucks and planes. That change in usage by the postal system and loss of revenue to the passenger railroad system just added insult to injury in the railroad's ability to continue passenger rail transportation in the more remote areas of the country. Yes, there were ups and downs in the 30s and after World War II, and especially government's entrance into the national highway system. But by the late 1960s and early 1970s, a crisis in rail passenger travel was emerging, resulting in the interjection of the government into the business of rail through the Rail Passenger Service Act of 1970. This legislation created the National Railroad Passenger Corporation, or better known Amtrak, which would thus become the overseeing body for rail transportation. Passenger rail service would no longer be the purview and responsibility of the individual railroad companies, but would be taken over by the government in the guise of a government-owned and run corporation. This endeavor, or as some might say, nationalization, began on May the 1st, 1971, and it served 43 states with a total of 21 routes. Getting back to the rails, what did this Rail Passenger Service Act of 1970 say? Well, from the law, I quote, to provide financial assistance for and establishment of a national rail passenger system, to provide for modernization of railroad passenger equipment, to authorize the prescribed minimum standards for railroad passenger service, and to amend Section 13A of the Interstate Commerce Act, and for other purposes, they say. So what did the law do? This Public Law 91-518, dated October 30th, 1970. First, it established the National Railroad Passenger Corporation, Amtrak, under Title III of this act. Then it tasked the commission, the Interstate Commerce Commission, the task of conducting a study in order to provide to Congress recommendations as to a system of rail passenger transportation. Including within this study were individuals to form a commission with representative of both the rail industry and labor organizations representing railway employees. 90 days later, a final report was to be presented to Congress. Also within this time frame, the National Railroad Passenger Corp was created and was tasked with running a for-profit passenger rail system. Keep in mind, a for-profit passenger rail system. The corporation was to have a minimum of 15 board members, of whom one was to be elected a chairman by the other 8 members. These 8 members were to be appointed by the president with congressional consent of Congress. 3 members to be elected by stockholders, and the remaining 4 would be elected by preferred stockholders. This board was to oversee the operation of the corporation, which was authorized to own, manage, operate, and/or contract for the operation of rail passenger service. Additionally, the corporation was able to enter in agreements to take over passenger rail service from the privately owned railroads and was availed with the responsibility to provide for a protective agreement for employees, including wages and pensions. This corporation was started with an infusion of a $40 million grant with an additional $100 million guarantee to lenders as to loss of principal or interest on securities, obligations, or loans issued to finance the upgrading of track or purchase of new railroad equipment. Now back to Amtrak. Amtrak operates from more than 500 destinations in 46 states and 3 Canadian provinces. It has over 20,000 employees and operates on more than 21,300 miles of track. But the tracks are still owned by the railroads. Now I'd like to take a brief aside here and make a personal comment. In all my talks, I've always been attuned into the management-employee ratios in government. In most of the agencies, departments, or offices I have covered, I have not been able to come up with a ratio as to the number of managers to employees. Alas, in this research, while browsing through the Amtrak Office of Inspector General site, I found in their budget estimate fiscal 2014 report, eureka, there it was. There are approximately 18,000 unionized employees and 3,000 non-agreement management employees, providing us with a 1-to-6 manager to employee ratio. This is a first for me. Now, ridership from October 2012 to September 2013 was nearly 31.6 million passengers. Geographically, Amtrak is divided into 6 regions, including Northeast, Southern, Midwest, Northwest, and California. When looking at these numbers, one needs to place into perspective the vision of a geographic anomaly that exists here. On both the East and West Coasts, there are high concentrations of people, and it is here and not in the interior of the United States that ridership is sufficient to cover costs. Now, when you go to an Amtrak site, you will find that Amtrak is touting its last 10 years as being banner years. If you read further, you find that although Amtrak had revenues of $2.877 billion, they had expenditures of $4.036 billion. And I particularly like the last sentence on Amtrak's site, and I want to quote this to you. No country in the world operates a passenger rail system without some form of a public support for capital costs and or operating expenses. Folks, just because others do it this way does not mean it's the correct way. But before I conclude, there needs to be another interjection into the discussion of Amtrak, the personage of Anthony Haswell, often called the father of Amtrak. You would ask, who is this Anthony Haswell? Haswell was a lawyer and passenger rail advocate who established a National Association of Railroad Passengers, or NARP, which became a major pushing agent for the non-dissolution of passenger rail transportation in the United States. He was a proponent of passenger rail service and would be instrumental in pushing, or should I say lobbying, for the passage of the Rail Passenger Service Act of 1970. This national association is still in existence today with a board of 15 and approximately 25,000 members. But more recently, I found from an article in the Indy Star dating December the 6th, 2013, and it states in part that Amtrak has, and I quote, relied on $1 billion or more dollars per year in taxpayer handouts to run slow and often late passenger trains. Indeed, this man, considered to be the father of Amtrak, made this statement that he is personally embarrassed over what I helped create. And in another article, this one from the Amarillo Globe, dated May the 1st, 2001, and it states, Amtrak has consumed more than $23 billion in federal subsidies since 1971. It lost $944 million last year, the most in its history. Now, this according to the Department of Transportation's Inspector General, so this is the government's own agency providing this data. And also, in that same article, it quotes our friend Anthony Haswell as saying, the railway insists on retaining a national system of trains rather than focusing service on areas with profitable potential. Recall their mandate, a for-profit passenger rail system. Do you think we got there? And lastly, in my research, I run across all kinds of funny stuff and interesting things, and especially my favorite thing called waste, fraud, and abuse. This, the DEA, and that's the Drug Enforcement Agency, paid an Amtrak employee over $800,000 for information that this DEA employee could have obtained for free. This said employee was allowed to retire. And that is what is wrong with our government system. And lastly, recall within the founding public law, it states that this corporation was, again, tasked with running a for-profit system. I ask, is that the case today? Well, that concludes my excursion into the workings of the National Railroad Passenger Corp, or better known as Amtrak. I surely hope you have a better understanding of this government-run corporation called Amtrak. So long. Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.